after the show with a web exclusive that we'll post online. Bob Boyle, lawyer for Herman Bell. Jose Saldana, formerly incarcerated in New York State prison, knew Herman Bell well, now an organizer with the group RAP, Release Aging People from Prison. I want to wish Matt Ely a happy birthday. Democracy Now! Is accepting applications for our paid year-long social media fellowship. Deadline May 6th. Go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the rededication of the Gaddar Commemoration Plaque on Saturday, April 7th at noon at the Astoria Maritime Park in Astoria. The Gaddar Party was founded in Astoria in 1913. It became a global movement to end British colonial rule in India. Its roots in Astoria, including ties to Finnish and other labor radicals, were honored in 2013 with a celebration and a plaque. That plaque was stolen last October. The East Indian community and other people of conscience will gather to rededicate and celebrate its installation on April 7th. Again, that's the rededication of the Gaddar Commemoration Plaque on Saturday, April 7th, at noon at the Astoria Maritime Park, 200 West Marine Drive in Astoria, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 5 o'clock, time for the KBOO Evening News. This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from the League of Women Voters of Portland, which is presenting a candidate forum on Tuesday, April 10th, beginning at 6 p.m. for candidates running in contested races for Metro President and Multnomah County for Auditor and Chair and Commissioner of District 2. And that will be at the Multnomah County Boardroom at 501 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. A second forum for Portland Commissioner Positions 2 and 3 and Metro Councilor Districts 2 and 4 will be held on Tuesday, April 24th, beginning at 6 p.m. at the Multnomah County Boardroom. More voter information at www.lwvpdx.org. This program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Underground Graduate School. My apologies. By Third Angle New Music and Hand-to-Mouth Theater, which is presenting A Fond Farewell, a reimagining of the music of Elliott Smith. This collaboration will be at the Alberta Rose Theater on Thursday, April 12th and Friday, April 13th. For more information, please visit www.thirdangle.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News.
Who faces charges? What an Oregon grand jury decided to do in the case of a man the police shot.
Governor Brown says she'll back supporters of net neutrality, though the feds have a dramatically different idea.
And are you enjoying the nice, easy, breezy weather? Watch out for storms rolling in.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April the 6th, 2018. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Ray Bodwell. NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administrator, has issued a weather warning for our area for tomorrow, Saturday, April 7th. Today has brought the calm before the storm with gentle showers and sunbeams peeking out between fluffy clouds with a high of 65 degrees. All that will change when strong gusty winds in two doses will arrive Saturday afternoon with heavy showers and thunderstorms. A high wind watch for the Portland area and the coastline will go into effect. Forecasters expect gusts to 50 miles an hour in the valley and 75 miles an hour on the beaches and the headlands. A deep low-pressure system will hit the valleys on Saturday morning, with the stronger storm system arriving in the afternoon. NOAA says to be ready for downed power lines and falling branches and trees.
A grand jury has made its decision about who to charge after Medford police shot a 41-year-old man late March. KBOO reporter Sam Bowman has the latest.
A grand jury in Jackson County, Oregon, has returned a 9-count indictment on a 41-year-old man who Medford police shot on March 29th. The grand jury also found the actions of the two officers involved in the shooting justified. The shooting was part of an hours-long standoff that began with a 911 call in the early afternoon. The caller claimed that a man had threatened two people with a firearm. When police found the man at his home in a row of duplexes on Garfield Street, dispatchers and cops on the scene were in contact with him for about half an hour. During that time, according to the Jackson County DA, he claimed that he was on a, quote, mission from God, and would protect his wife and children who were with him in the home. At 2:09, the man went out the back door and reportedly fired one shot into the air. Veteran police officers Timothy Pickens and Jenny Bridges were in the yard of a nearby duplex, and the man reportedly turned his rifle on them. The DA says Pickens then fired one shot, which struck the man in the chest. The man reportedly fired one more shot from within the home before he left and police arrested him. Once he got out of an area hospital, he was booked into the Jackson County Jail on Easter Sunday. After finding the actions of officers Pickens and Bridges, quote, fully justified and in compliance with Oregon law, the grand jury heard the case against the injured man, which was presented by Chief Deputy DA Jeremy Markovich. The grand jury charged the man with 6 counts of first-degree attempted assault and 3 counts of unlawful use of a weapon with a firearm. At his arraignment Monday, the man showed his wound to the courtroom and said, quote, I didn't shoot at anybody and I got shot, end of quote. At the grand jury hearing on Wednesday, Markovich presented evidence that the 41-year-old had fired at police, showing that a bullet hole in the front door of his home lined up with a hole in a neighbor's window near where officers had gathered to negotiate with him. It's unclear what the police knew about the man prior to the shooting, or if he was experiencing a mental health crisis at the time. Body cam footage of the incident from officers Pickens and Bridges is blocked due to the officers seeking cover at the time, the DA says, but the audio was not affected. Neither the video nor the audio has been released to the public. The DA's office says it will not release any more information until the end of the criminal case. The next court date is scheduled for April 9th. For Cable Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.
A Clackamas County Sheriff's Sergeant who blew the whistle on the poor performance of a veteran detective has filed a $1.6 million lawsuit. He claims his supervisors created a hostile work environment after he complained. Sergeant Matt Swanson filed the lawsuit this week in state court. It names the Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Craig Roberts, and Undersheriff Matt Ellington as defendants. Swanson says that in 2015, after he tried to start an investigation with the Internal Affairs Division about Detective Jeff Green, Swanson was subject to retaliation and harassment. Green pleaded guilty last summer to 2 misdemeanors for failing to investigate reports of child abuse. Detective Green retired in 2015.
KBOO News told you last week about Chris Reiser, a Portland public school teacher suspended for leading his students on a Black Lives Matter walkout at Ockley Green Middle School. Full disclosure, Chris Reiser is also a host of Labor Radio here on KBOO. PBS announced this week that they no longer have plans to fire Reiser for his involvement in the student walkout. Reiser's suspension became public March 25th after parents and community members learned of his absence and got upset about it. Parents, students, and their supporters immediately held protests and rallies against the decision. Reiser was not the only teacher present during the walkout, but PPS implied that he had instigated it. The walkout happened on the one-year anniversary on the shooting of Quanis Hayes, a 17-year-old police cornered in a northeast Portland yard. District Chief Human Resources Officer Kylie Rogers originally recommended that the school district fire Reiser for helping lead the walkout, saying he'd put children's safety at risk. But more recently, she said the community's feedback gave her a better understanding of, quote, the historic failure of the district to consistently support the Ockley Green community. Rogers' statement reinstating Reiser went out just as parents swarmed district headquarters to rally their support for Reiser.
Ockley Green reopened as a middle school in 2016 and has encountered frequent instances of dysfunction. District assessments of the school noted that stakeholders characterized it as a place that, quote, where dysfunction has become normalized, end quote. It was also cited as a place in need of attention on a list of school board priorities. Parent Christopher Sargent told the Oregonian that North Portland schools have, quote, weathered years of neglect by the Portland public school system. He says that engagement with community concerns by teachers like Mr. Reiser is what gives many parents hope for the school. Despite the fact that the district decided not to fire Reiser, it's unclear when he will return to class and if he will face disciplinary action.
Oregon is joining other states across the U.S. that are backing net neutrality, with Governor Kate Brown about to sign a bill. The idea is to give companies a financial incentive to allow unhindered online access. House Bill 4145 requires state and local governments to only use internet providers that abide by the principles of net neutrality. Net neutrality would prevent internet companies from giving special treatment or faster access to websites that pay a premium to reach customers. The FCC voted last December to roll back net neutrality protections that the Obama administration adopted. The new rules take effect this month. Those in favor of the repeal say regulation stifles online innovation. Those against it say without net neutrality, large internet service providers could charge sites extra for faster connections. Advocates of net neutrality also say that deregulation will make it more difficult for new internet companies to gain ground. Governor Kate Brown says she will sign the bill on Monday.
KBOO News has been following the story of Ana Del Rosario, the state director for Political Action Committee Color PAC. TriMet fare enforcers and Portland police detained her last month for not having her TriMet monthly VIT pass with her. They asked her for personal ID and proof of citizenship. When she exercised her right to not provide that information, police took her into custody and charged her with theft of services and falsifying information. Del Rosario's legal last name is Valderrama. Police records show officers misspelled Del Rosario's name in both reports and falsely documented Del Rosario as trying to access a monthly pass on her phone. The Portland Police Bureau corrected the errors earlier this week. Opal Environmental Justice Oregon held a rally to support Del Rosario's case yesterday. They dropped the theft of services charges at a hearing, but not the falsifying information charge. Anna Del Rosario's case will not go to trial. Opal PDX and Stand With Anna are asking those interested in showing support for Del Rosario to call or email the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office to tell them to drop the charge. It's Community Court Case 18-C-R-1753. There is also a legal fund at www.gofundmeannadelrosario, and that's A-N-A-D-E-L-R-O-C-I-O.
Many TV viewers may be unaware that their favorite local news is brought to them on a station that the conservative Sinclair Broadcast Group owns or manages. And in many markets, Sinclair owns more than one station. KBOO's own Ray Bodwell has these thoughts.
Last weekend's realization that the Sinclair Broadcast Group forced their local news anchors to read what they referred to as a, quote, corporate responsibility editorial, end quote, decrying the spread of fake news has provoked outrage and backlash. The extent of the corporate message control became apparent when the website Deadspin reviewed the editorials from 30 separate stations and confirmed that all the anchors were delivering the exact same message. Here's the sound from a clip that shows the message being delivered by a single anchor, then that same message overlaid with that of 29 others.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and
false news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The right-wing pro-Trump company defended themselves by saying, quote, "It is ironic that we would be attacked for messages promoting our journalistic initiative for fair and objective reporting," end quote. But according to media watchdog Media Matters to America, Sinclair is well known, quote, "for its history of abusing public trust to air right-wing spin and promote xenophobia on local news shows," end quote. And the company routinely requires its affiliate stations to run pro-Trump pieces by former Trump administration official Boris Epstein. Bearing in mind how far to the right Sinclair leans, you might assume that most or all of the stations that they own would be Fox affiliates, but you'd be wrong. Sinclair is the largest owner of television stations in the U.S., but of the 193 stations they currently own or manage through shared services agreements, only 43 are identified as Fox affiliates. Among local stations they control are 33 ABC stations, 27 CBS stations, and 22 stations in the CW network, which is also owned by CBS. They have 22 NBC stations and 22 stations of the My Network TV system, which is owned by Fox Entertainment and managed by Fox Television. Here in Portland, they control both KATU, the ABC affiliate, and KUNP, the Spanish-language Univision station. In many cities, they own more than one TV station. According to Wikipedia, in Syracuse, New York, they own the NBC affiliate and manage the CBS station. In Columbus, Ohio, they operate stations affiliated with ABC, Fox, and the CW. In the Northern California broadcast area, bounded by Eureka and Chico, a distance of less than 200 miles as the TV signal flies, they control 11 local television stations covering every major network except NBC. Sinclair is currently in negotiations to buy Tribune Media, which would put 30 additional stations under their control and give them a voice in Chicago, New York, and Washington, D.C. markets. The merger has only become possible since the Trump administration eliminated long-standing limits on media ownership, a ruling that has since caused the FCC Inspector General to open an investigation into whether FCC Chairman Ajit Pai implemented the rule change specifically to help Sinclair. As part of the corporate editorial, all the Sinclair anchors recited this line.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
But in fact, Sinclair itself may pose one of the biggest threats to our democracy. Although the numbers vary, multiple polls have shown that Americans trust their local TV news more than national news. That trust is presumably earned by providing clear, accurate, and objective reporting and programming. But how much can you trust in the accuracy or objectivity of your local TV news team or teams when they are tightly controlled by a conservative corporation with a track record of right-wing bias? Frankly, I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that we should all voice our opposition to the acquisition of Tribune Media by Sinclair, and I know that we should all follow the advice of KBOO's own Chris Andre, who closes every one of her Air Cascadia shows with this reminder.
I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand.
For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell. You are listening to the Cable Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin from the Institute for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. At 6, it's Bread and Roses featuring a discussion with guest Lois Isbell about meditation as a way of life. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather will see a low of 53 with a 100% chance of rain. A thunderstorm and high wind advisory is in effect for tomorrow, with a high chance of showers and wind gusts over 40 miles per hour. Today in history, in 1712, a slave revolt in New York City began, which resulted in the deaths of 9 whites and the indiscriminate execution of 21 blacks, some by particularly cruel methods that were otherwise illegal in the British Empire. The quote of the day is some food for thought from birthday boy and Italian poet Petrarch, who said, quote, "It is better to will the good than to know the truth."
Portland Underground Graduate School is putting on a festival this weekend it calls Pugsfest, and you, our beloved listeners, are invited to get a discount to this event by going to www.pugspdx.com, then click on the link for Pugsfest 2018, and you enter this promo code, PUGSPAL100. Pugsfest is an annual event at which people can take interesting courses from a dozen different speakers. This year's theme is energy. The festival takes place tomorrow, April 7th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Tabor Space. That's at 5441 Southeast Belmont. Regular entry costs $69.
Does it seem like more people you know are protesting and getting politically active? A new Washington Post Kaiser Foundation poll finds that since the start of 2016, 1 in 5 Americans have protested in the streets or in political rallies. That means tens of millions of people. Only about 19% say they've never joined a march or political gathering before. The poll finds a majority of the recently motivated activists are critical of President Trump, with 70% of them disapproving of him. 44% are age 50 or older, and 36% earn more than $100,000 a year. They are equally men and women, but far more likely to be Democrats than Republicans, and more likely to have attended at least some college. Of those showing up for events, the top causes they were rallying to support were women's and LGBTQ rights, the Affordable Care Act, abortion rights, and opposing stricter immigration policies. 19% were protesting in favor of Trump and 32% against him. The poll of more than 1,800 adults across the country was done in the first 2 months of this year.
The administrator for the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency said today that it will take as much as $50 million to help rebuild Puerto Rico from the damage of Hurricane Maria. FEMA head Brock Long warns the U.S. territory is not ready for the upcoming storm season, let alone another disaster. Hurricane season starts on June 1st. Long says his agency plans to make the island's roads, homes, bridges, and electrical grid as strong as possible, but he warns about the realistic status of resources. He says, quote, "We're running out of time and have a long way to go." FEMA and local government leaders have already stockpiled more than 15.6 million liters of water and more than 2.8 million meals in 5 warehouses across the island in case another disaster strikes. Long has stressed that Puerto Rico's public and private sectors must build a strong emergency network and work together to plan.
An Arab-Israeli member of Israel's parliament is calling for the Israeli government to be held accountable for, in her words, crimes against the Palestinians. Hanin Zoabi, the first Arab woman elected to the Knesset from an Arab political party, says the ongoing Palestinian march in Gaza is a, quote, "peaceful act of struggle," end quote. Zoabi says the statement today from the leader of Hamas, which announced that Palestinians are going to Jerusalem to pray at Al-Aqsa Mosque, reinforces the peaceful vision of the march. At the UN headquarters in New York, Zoabi advocated for the need of millions of Palestinians to march to Jerusalem. But she says she feels that Palestinians cannot participate for fear that the Israelis will kill them. Zoabi warned that Israel's conflict with the Palestinians has transformed from, quote, "a racist situation to a fascist situation," end quote. She added the political change in the country won't stop this transformation. As of this afternoon, violence has killed 7 Palestinians, including a teenager, as the marchers tried to cross the Gaza border fence. The Israeli Defense Force characterized the march as a, quote, "riot," and have threatened to strike deep into Gaza if the, quote, "disturbances" do not end. This week has already seen the deadliest days in the Gaza Strip since the Israeli offensive of 2014, which killed more than 2,000 civilians.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News. This is the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture from Native Voice One. You can find more stories and podcasts at nv1.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Middle Rio Grande Pueblo Tribal Consortium was formed a couple years ago to address the tribal digital divide. In our series, State of Change, we learn more about the group's work on a tribally owned infrastructure project. Construction workers lay cables underground near a road in Sandoval County on a warm February day in New Mexico. The fiber optic network, which runs about 60 miles, will bring high-speed internet to 4 tribal libraries, Cochiti, San Felipe, Santa Ana, and Santo Domingo. The tribes partnered to obtain a federal E-rate subsidy of nearly $4 million for the project. The library at Santo Domingo Pueblo, located off Interstate 25 between Santa Fe and Albuquerque, opened in the 1960s and has evolved to serve tribal citizens and their neighbors in nearby towns.
We're out of the way as far as connectivity, and this is the only place that they can access internet.
Cynthia Aguilar is the librarian at Santo Domingo Pueblo. Her community, like other rural tribes across the country, uses the library as the main place to connect to the web for education and other opportunities. People also use their personal cell phones with data plans, but the connection is spotty, says Santo Domingo Tribal Program Administrator Everett Chavez. He says there are not many options for his children and others in the community to access the internet outside of the weekday public library hours of 8 to 5.
They have to drive up to the top of the hill by the interstate to get a signal on their laptops to do work for school and connecting with the various people that they need to connect with.
That's a similar story at Cochiti Pueblo, located a few miles from Santo Domingo. Cochiti's library uses a telecommunications provider for internet service, but it's costly, around $1,500 a month. Students in the after-school program often feel the impacts. Library staff prioritize internet use, says Education Director Kevin Lewis.
Well, we have to pick and choose who gets internet for the day. We have to look at our students and say, are you doing homework? What are you doing? Are you just browsing the internet?
Lewis says when the broadband project is complete, the bill will be a couple hundred dollars, and the savings can be put back into library resources.
We do live on a reservation, but it's not because we're stuck here. It's not because there's boundaries. It's our home. We do acknowledge that those modern conveniences are out there. We don't want to push them off the reservation. We don't want to push them away from the village. We want them to stay here. But we still want them to have the equal, adequate access to those modern conveniences.
The project is expected to be finished this spring. Leaders would like to address the tribal digital divide beyond education and expand high-speed internet into areas of healthcare, business, and individual homes. Tribal leaders are currently working with U.S. lawmakers to ensure tribes are included in national infrastructure plans. This week, citizens of the White Mountain Apache Tribe in Arizona voted in their first female chair. Gwendina Lee Gatewood says priorities include transparency in government, environmental protection, and economic development. She also sees a need to invest in young women.
Women have an important place in this world. They have a voice. They have a duty, more so now than ever before. They are trailblazers. We have all forms of leadership coming from women. They have callings, and each one of them carry a unique talent, and they represent their families, their communities, themselves. As long as they continue their work, you know, in faith and prayer, not give up, their voices will be heard.
Lee Gatewood is expected to be sworn in May when longtime leader of the tribe, Chairman Ronnie Loopy, leaves office after more than 50 years of service. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Please call us with breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell, Sam Bowman, Zealous Ellis Marchant, and Annette Newell. The producer is Sam Bowman. Our engineer is Sam Bowman. The KBOO Evening News wouldn't be happening tonight without Sam Bowman. And the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zealous Ellis Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Annette Newell. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste take your calls. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time. At 10, Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet. At 11, Health Watch looks at herbal medicines in the treatment of seasonal allergies. And then at 11:30, Between the Covers talks to author Natalie Singer about her new book, California Calling, A Self-Interrogation. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. To keep informed and get involved, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate and become a member. Hope you have a wonderful evening. Good night, Ray.
Good night, Annette, and good night, Sam.
Night, Sam.
Good night, you guys.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, as we record, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz is saying the death toll is now 19 Palestinians killed by Israeli military, with hundreds more injured, on March 30th during a protest near the fence along the border between Israel and the occupied region of Gaza. Israeli media offer a more complicated understanding of events than U.S. media, who seem to suggest that there's an Israeli position and a Palestinian position, but no actual reality worth trying to discern. We'll talk about the Gaza protests with Phyllis Bennis, director of the New Internationalism Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, and author of, among other titles, Understanding the Palestinian-Israeli Conflict. Also on the show, the term Orwellian may be overused, but if the spectacle of dozens of local TV anchors being required to recite a script provided by their corporate owner that declares that fake news is dangerous to democracy